I don't know why does it seem that now we don't have time to visit or something, and back then we visited. And yet you had it took to do things seemed to take a long time.
Well, you gotta consider. In those days we're living in an agricultural environment. After 6 o'clock the world ends. And you don't have anything to entertain you other than your mouth and a couple of objects and then you could be present.
It's called kids.
Yeah. And then you listen to the power of the dogs yelling all night. And then you enjoy the possible sun or the starlight for the full moon. Or it's down by the river and here with this jump.
I used to go there.
But then the elderly folks were forgetting they're talking about over the hill when they were in there and he's fixing or something. And we have kids to talk about anything like that. So I just stick around too long here with this. Oh, go on, go to bed. When you're going to bed, you don't want to sleep with that idea. And now we're just sleeping out.
That's true.
So you look at the ceiling.
Now
we're near
approaching
on
the tree.
And the character of fireflies passes on. And after a while, it starts to interfere with the thing that they want to go into in the night time to see the fireflies fly around. And to put in the place to express their entertainment. Looking at fireflies in the dark.
So now we are.
Now we're trying to
entertain
them. Entertainment by making a TV set around the fireflies.
And sleep room.
I'll get up next morning. Get up on the four-wheeler. Look on the road. See those days, 5 miles on the road is another rocks. 5 miles on this road, they got another four-wheeler trees. Four-wheeler trees, the four-wheeler horses. Everybody's coming from.
But we seem to be going faster, and I can't tell whether we're really accomplishing anymore. It's almost like spinning wheels.
Well, that's the cost of evolution, because you can't go back. You gotta go forward, you gotta go back. So the investment in living is the investment in motion. So you begin to see. The trees are there, they're going to be for a long while, they're looking to, and they provide all opportunities for you to look at nothing. And you and I would never be satisfied in one position longer than the next. The incident that is about to do, of one day, with your mind. Go and sleep. But even you sleep, you can't stop trying not to sleep.
That's what you try to do with yoga, though, to stop all the fidgeting, right? Is that right? Okay. That's what you try to do in yoga, is to stop the fidgeting and calm it all down?
That's what you're trying to do.
Now, this is Linda Gardner.
That's what you're trying to do. So we find out what we are actually doing is an exhausting technique. So you get bored, so somebody who doesn't want to be disturbed comes along and gives you a technique not to get bored. It's called repetition. You know, it's fully well. Only by repetition you can get sleepy and fall asleep. It will give you anything to repeat.
So what is it?
So, but tomorrow you got a bill of fence. So you need to come in and say, look, here's the best repetition for tonight to prepare you for tomorrow, Thanksgiving. And if you listen to what they say, then you better you need to dig a hole for the person, 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 and then you walk under the roof. And all night, you're digging a hole for the person.
Are you tired?
So anyway, you get up now and you're talking around and knock at the door. You ready to go to work? You dig a hole for the person? Dig a hole for the person? He has your shoulder, a bigger hole, and he did the fence by digging the hole and putting the post in. And after you've done about, say, 300 feet of it, then you find one, nail a post across, nail a post across, nail a post across, nail a post across, nail a post across. So you nail a post across, nail a post across. You do the other 200 feet. After a few...
I feel like it has some type of history. You know, I've got some that's glazed, like everybody else, but then I brought another one and it's the same.
Yeah. You tie it up in the market.
Was there a reason why they started doing it that way, or was it just an interesting texture?
Well, the thing is just they're trying to duplicate what nature did to the rock. Most of the thing that they do there is duplication of what we see. For instance, all right, they'll make a design on it. Kind of a back room. If you use a skin or a bar, or if you use a saxophone, they can find little pebbles so small, they're all individual like bricks. And then if they're rolling, and then there's pick them up to form the actual design. And you'll think that the design was actually chiseled up in a rock like that. But what they did was do back run slab, with a soft, puppy-like slab that they mix up. And then they find specific colors with little bits like a belt of a pepper. And they and then in large quantities, and they stick them over the side. What was called sandstone paper. The actual sand.
Oh, that's
not. It's not a painted sand. It's like, over the other, I'll show you. When they have a crystal of iron, crystal of lime, crystal of silicon, and a crystal of agate, all these different little crystals, but the crystals are like one little grit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a grit, you know.
I can see that.
It's like when you squash up a black pepper, and they have grits, the thing is all called like little grits, and they run. Mini marbles, like you look at mini marbles under the microscope. And they're around, and you take them with the work of the hands, you stick them together. And you get to leave them, and then you walk it, skin. You use a kind of a mark, and they come clean, and you'll take it actually made like that with the rock. Because I'm looking to always know it.
It's beautiful. I went there and I saw something, gee, I'm going to go home with this. And it was made in Japan.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah, it was cheaper. No, it wasn't Japan, it was Mexico. But I had talked to an Indian Navajo before, and he said the look is the same. I can tell you a bit.
You see, the Mexicans, spend time to learn it from the Navajo. Then to go back to Mexico to find the same stuff on the Mexico side. Then they make it on the Mexico side of the border. And then the American comes along on the American side of the border and he puts his hand across the wire mesh. He hands him the daughter and takes the object across the wire. So then the Navajo is puzzled. Where did you get this from? Because the American guy is going to put this hand and put up the Mexican design here for sale in competition with the Navajo. That's what they do.
Yeah, and you know that.
But the Mexicans went to study it from the Navajo, went back to the Mexican side, makes the design on the Navajo, and sells it to the American guy to sell it on the American side.
Well, they've got it up there in the Navajo side.
Yeah.
Well, it's Grand Canyon.
Well, the Navajo has to put something to make sure that the object is genuine Navajo art. And that's how they go by the signature of the image. And they keep a tag on all their Navajo art. So if you're buying it from an American stamp, it looks genuine American Navajo art. But until you see the signature, you know that it's made in Mexico.
If he hadn't told me, I wouldn't have known.
The point is this. The Mexican man actually came over to the Navajo place, studied it in the Navajo person, paid the man the money to learn it, and went back on the other side of the fence, simply because the material is more available on the other side than on the Navajo side.
Mexico?
Yeah, there's more material on the other side. What do you think they call Arizona, New Mexico? New Mexico or Old Mexico?
But it's a long height between the two.
That's the American trunk line. You know trunk line? You know the trunk line?
Heard of it, I don't know.
That's a road between Asia to Far East Asia to Middle East Asia. Right up to Europe, where the European across the Middle East. It's like a rug 10 or 66 or something to stay tidy as a trunk out. Well, that's the same thing like that over here.
They're carting that little pottery.
Yeah. But when you see, on their side, the Mexican side, there's more of that material sitting there doing nothing. The Navajo people have been doing it for centuries. And then the Mexican came over and saw it and they studied it and then left and then they started digging back to it or something.
But I didn't see, there are other tribes making jewelry and all, and I didn't see anything like that sand.
Sandstone is Navajo.
And they say the Navajo make, no, it's the Hopi that makes very small jewelry.
This is the Indian jewelry. That's one of the oldest techniques in the world. That was brought from Egypt. Okay. But the Indian made it.
How did they
do it? Well, the person who studied it. So you can go back and look at all these books on Egyptian craft and spend time to develop the question. There was a ship that was sunk on the way from it was going from Egypt to Canaan and it got sunk. And then that ship they found artifacts. Today it's in the Israeli Museum. And they found swords, three swords, that's how the fact is finished. for the years. Right, copper and silver.
It's copper?
This one is near the silver one. Is. But the person who learned this art went to school and bought it to develop the technique. Then did a lot of research to develop the technique. They cast it in the sand.
They do a lot of sand.
Yes,
and work it. The work is done on the metal before it is made into a ring. Done after the ring.
They cut the stone. They have a kind of soft stone that they dug out, and the stone has the impression, and they melt the material into it, and the material sets up in that stone. And then they break, lift it out of the stone, and then they block it.
What
is it called? Does it have any name, the technique? They call it sand casting, but I don't know another name for it. Sand casting. And what is comical, you think of Indian men doing the research to get the technique. So it's like not an Indian man doing the research to get the technique. It's a Chicago Italian man.
That's
bad, yeah. Who spent all his years doing research and ended up finding this technique and finding the stone where one of the Indians and casting it there. So when I came across it, I recognized it from some of the old manuscripts that were shipped of the sun in the time of the Mary Magdalene relatives and the great Gary. He had the scroll for that. I recognized it and I saw it there and I said, how did you guys get one of them? I was surprised. But you usually make them out of silver and copper. Then I asked him if they wanted the silver and soft gold.
It was from a ship that was sunk of Mary Magdalene's relative?
Well, she was married to Joseph of Arimathea's brother.
Oh, that's right, the ship builder.
Yeah, and so many of their ships were sunk off the coast. They're doing a lot of undersea diving now around that area, bringing up a lot of artifacts, tracing the fact that there was a big shipping industry going on in the Faroe times, the kind of borders.
Put it down, doesn't it go back to Atlantis?
To release the metal, you had to break the mold, sand mold.
Well, you have to chip it,
right? Then you have to make a new mold.
Yeah, you have to make a new mold.
So each one is original.
Yeah.
Therefore, each one will have a different laboratory.
You can buy the mold if you want, but you can't use it. Because then they spin the mold, the edge where they have to cut it to separate it. They stick it with it, put it back together, won't hold it. Before it's not going to hold it. But you can actually buy the mold from him because you're selling the mold. Each mold is to be individual finished mold. Then they call it sandstone casting. because it leaves the effect of the sun on the metal.
And they used to make omelets. That was more than a lens.
Well, I thought this gets spread into a lot of things, but these ideas are also being found in other areas. That's what's so funny, you don't know how they get the other areas.
I seem to associate it with Atlantis and Cancun. Well, I guess you'd say Atlantis. In that case, we're playing out of space.
The Minnesota Island is out of space. Not too long ago. Oh, this was not too long ago. Some people who were supposed to be lost in the Bermuda Triangle were found floating on their own boat 3 months ago.
When were they lost?
They were reported lost in 1948.
When did they say they
were found?
Yeah.
They were reported lost off the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, but when they found down in the Everglades in Florida, then? Where were they found?
Right off the Bermuda Triangle.
Okay. They were still there in the same space.
That many years? Yeah. They didn't have a revelation?
It was in the...
The candles of the third camp.
They had the pictures of them. The whole family that lived together.
That's neat.
They were reported lost in the 40s, and then nobody traced them back. And then they found the whole boat complete and everything. So they are not people. Only one thing is, they can only recall being in a spinning part of the ocean that seemed like a soup. And that's
the whirlwind?
Like a whirlwind.
Okay, now you tell us where they were.
Then they came out, and then they came out many years after.
They've been whirling all that time?
Well, they have no conception of time.
No conception of time.
I didn't say what they did. I want to know what you say they did.
What I say, I'm just reporting what the reporters of doing the research now.
I want you to do your own research. I noticed it. My curiosity.
So they have a whole program that's called the case of the abducting. They're doing a case of the time. Making any such report, they require to make reports of abducting.
Did they age?
No.
It's just like in cameras. You know, all of a sudden, there they are. They got their plane back. Because they didn't get the people.
Right. What's the name over there, sitting there, rent? Australia.
Right.
And he did a whole year at Fremont.
It's probably
he got all the seasons at Fremont.
He got the whole spectrum of the seasons with 3 months. And so what he did, he went into tomorrow, he came back into yesterday, and now it's functioning today. It all happened right in the planet Earth. So he's one for the guy.
And what is your explanation?
My explanation is the world is too small.
But if it got bigger, would it still fit?
Yeah.
When he went to Australia, it was a different time frame.
That's why he went to tomorrow.
That's international day.
Because the dateline.
They're ahead of us there.
Yeah.
They're into winter.
Yeah. They left like here, and he arrived there. It was there already.
India spring.
And it was all spring. And then you have to come back. It was their spring, but it was all
summer.
Summer. where you did a whole year in 3 months. So you're very confused right now. Which means you're too far to work or identify it. Tomorrow, yesterday.
Just think how you would have been if you'd been able to go to China.
Add
that on to us.
Well, that's if it happened to Melissa and Vicky. They're still possible with tomorrow, yesterday, or today. We can't get on the assistant.
From going to China?
They went to China?
I had that about a month after coming back from India. And I'd wake up in the night, and I was sure I was in India. And next thing you know, you know, there's the cat. There's
yeah.
Hey, this is not India. What is jet lag really anyway? Besides tomorrow, today, and maybe.
Well, we got a lot of excuses for jet lag.
It was you who said if you go west, you're okay. If you go east, you better eat better.
Right.
Well, you see, the thing is this. It doesn't matter where you go on the planet. You can eat solar. That's the one thing about solar eating. You can eat solar any part of the planet, any time.
You just go by where you're at.
See, because if you're 24 hours, you're going to be in the area where it's going to be either morning or midnight. So if you left 10 o'clock in the morning, which is 10 o'clock at night in the other part of the world, by the time you arrive there, it's 10 o'clock in the morning again, that part of the world. So why did you do the double breakfast?
They just have a little flush.
Right. They don't have a problem.
And if you didn't eat solar, what happens when you go east?
Hmm?
Why did you say that? If you don't eat solar.
Then you got a problem because you got a jet lag. So most people like a custard eat eggs in the morning. So when they arrive there, they're going to like eat eggs. Then they got the time.
Just go to India and they're eating rice.
But if you are eating solar.
Morning, noon, and night.
If you're eating solar, you can leave here at 10 o'clock in the morning, eat an apple, and spend in the evening where you're going to. When you arrive, it's 10 in the morning.
Eat another apple.
You don't go eat
It's going to Pakistan. You are pretending about drinking the
Well, she's born there, it's no problem. They were born there, they don't have a problem.
Yeah, where's born there?
No problem. They travel with a lot of country, and then they come back to America after you've gone for 28 days. Very quickly, you don't drink beer, or you can get it, you can disappear in America.
I did it.
I know you did it, but I told you I've been there.
You know, I was very careful in Mexico, I did it just right.
But the same
way,
Ginny Peace did it. She went all the way across the internet, tried in the local alcohol, kept going up. She came back to the United States of America.
Didn't
that
take a flight.
And she called back to me, I got the problem. I said, well, you mean to tell you that David drink me when you got back in the state? No. So I reached out to the family to drink this.
What are you drinking? Jim what?
Jim Beam. Mm-hmm. You know Jim Beam?
Not really.
A bourbon.
Daniel went out and got me a bush because he figured that was close enough to home. It's probably
well,
made
in California.
Corn whiskey. I should got whiskey. I've got a beer.
Well,
just
you said home.
Busch Gardens, Williamsburg.
But if you want to be safe, he decided to do this thing when he was designed for
the
co-pilot. Yeah, he just picked the drink on either side of the planet, no matter where you go. It's hot sake. That's made from rice. The rice is the national leaf of grass all over. And if you heat it, rather than get to serve it, then you ensure yourself against the medication for any part of it.
Did they have it everywhere?
They have it on the
Pan
Airlines if you
want to
travel that way.
In the Eastern countries, rice wine is always available in any hotel.
Yeah.
Is it best to drink it before you enter that country or when you come back?
Or when you get
there?
Depending
on
the
dysentery.
Or
what?
Well, it's a benefit to take it before, in either place, because it's hot sake, it's hot sake. So it doesn't make as long as you're going to use it, but if they're serving you, most of the problem in those countries is not the cooking of the food. It's the dish when it's washed. What they wash it with after you use the dish, they don't wash it hot water. They wash it cold water. So that's how you really get the mimic dysentery from the dishes washed in cold water. Like in a disposable dish, you don't have a problem. But sitting in a disposable dish, the dishes are washed with cold water, and that cold water, possible, can be immediate dysentery carrying. So to safeguard yourself against that, is to throw the hot sake over the food in the serving, that insulates, sterilizes the food and the plate and everything, and when you finish it, that's it.
I won't get a hangover or anything.
No, you can't get a hangover outside. You got to get back up there. Remember what
you can't throw it over. What
Paul said was to Timothy. Paul said to Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach's sake. But in America, we're drinking a little wine for our brain sake.
A lack of brain sake.
That's where you get sick.
Same with yogurt.
If you take a little wine to your stomach's sake, one jiggle on top of the food, you're insulated against it. And so, I'd suggest you take some hot sake too.
When you get home.
Oh,
same
thing.
When you get home, also. If you go to an American hotel, I mean, where a lot of tourists go, you may be able to get it, because India would cater to the Americans, even to me, in a hotel.
So you can right, no problem. You're born there, no problem. You're already immune to it.
But that bit about coming home. And you know, I did it. I didn't think anything of it. Then they said, well, I know. Then again, I
it was just every gesture they hung on, they jeered from the balcony, all the Japanese people.
Thank you. You're welcome.
There you go.
Life to life.
Life.
I don't know. He went out. I think he was getting off. His dress game. Oh, we might as well do it to everybody.
so we got into it.
We ought to come in and get the
business. Is there any significance to people coming in and out my back door? What is it?
It's more easy to be accepted.
But John just slipped out the back, and John always comes in my back door. The first time you all came, you came up through the back, like in the little pantry. It threw me off.
Everyone came in the back door. It was wonderful.
Nobody used it there. In fact, we just finally fixed the door so we open in the front.
You can see my face on the open door.
Unless you find one of those keys for the other door.
Well, there is other ways out, but you gotta lock your way out. You gotta lock the door on the way out, and there's no way you can do that.
I have a feeling Christopher's gonna do it too, because Cliff tells me later that, you know, he came home one night, his deadline, he wanted to go back to a party. So he went back. I just think, suppose I'd gone upstairs and he wasn't there. That would have been a shock.
Sounds like it's raining again.
Yeah. I want to remember to ask you to give me more information about Echolocket. I think you said it's better to watch it and get the strobe effect by
right.
That would be all the way through? Yeah.
I see, the thing is this, your sense of retention is speeded up by the moving effect of the eyes.
And yawning also?
Yeah.
And that's just because when you yawn, you remember better.
Well, what is happening when you go into meditation and it becomes echolocation?
But that's the whole idea of meditation. They say most people don't know what are you trying to accomplish in meditation. You know what you're trying to accomplish. We got a lot of things we thought of us. But when we really come to the final experience, what you think it is that you're accomplishing in meditation?
Peace and understanding. It puts you in a tranquil state for the Lord.
It depends on what I want at the moment, I guess. And then sometimes I just meditate.
You might
guess. Thank you.
Okay, well, you tell us. I remember the very first time we ever met you, it was at, Mary Kay Tanaga had set up at a church nearby, and the whole talk was on meditation, and you had used the English language again, and every letter in there had a meaning. Moving, matter. I don't remember what they were, but
energy was one.
Energy acting on consciousness.
Directing individual thought activities. Total observation of oneness with the moment of our nature.
You're right. I started writing that down this afternoon.
I missed all that. I missed all that.
Moving electrons.
Okay.
Directing individual thought activities. Towards.
What did you say?
Two words.
I'm sorry.
Two words.
I
could have sworn it was
electrons. Directing individual thought activities towards
intuitive observation. Or observation independent of the senses. That's what intuition is.
Intuition.
and oneness. And it's not only an obligation, it's a oneness independent of the senses with noumena, or nature. So what you're actually doing with simple language, you're reliving the memory of the sperm bonding in the ovum that put you together. But you don't realize it until it happens to you after it's over. Many, many incarnations of Buddha safety over and over. That is exactly what you attempted to accomplish. To relive the memory of the actual journey of the sperm bonding with the ovum to put you together. The ovum is your skull, and the sperm is your spine, and the sperm doesn't bite the ovum gobbles up the sperm. And until you live it, you don't know for sure what you are.
Okay.
And therefore, that particular experience is called enlightenment, because the moment the crunch of hearing the bite on the neck of the sperm in you by the ovum, the whole world around you becomes like a 4th of July. It's called moving electrons. And so it's like eyes open, eyes shut. The whole room is nothing but moving electrons. But then, 7.5 minutes is called the crazy state or schizophrenic state. The next 7.5 is called night of the soul. But you don't see nothing, hear nothing, and you don't know if you'll ever come up with it. But if you stick it out at the end of 15 minutes, all around you is atom. And for the first time, you can trust an atom by walking the cognitive floor. That's the mind balance, that is solid. As you look at it with a certain awareness, and then all of a sudden it shifts and it becomes moving atoms. Even the chair I'm sitting on, I accept it's solid, but then when it shifts and it becomes moving atoms, if I panic, I ain't going anywhere to do the thing. I'll panic only inside of it. I just get the critical vision. But then I can also move through it if I don't panic. It's called materializing and dematerializing at will. So all the realized masters of it, those who realize it and master it, are able to interface with the density of matter, acting as a mass and acting as no mass. That's very far from with Shirley McQueen. She's busy trying to get out of her head, the outside of her body, to travel in light. And we are busy interfacing our mass by being the light. She wants to be a moth. She prefers to be better light.
So 15 minutes is a delta. Right? And the whole business then is enhanced.
You're
schizophrenic, that's a panic.
No. You see, 15 minutes on a clock, it looks like very little time to sit down and try to get into that experience by recalling it. It isn't so easy to experience, because that 15 minutes may seem like 15 million years. That's how come Einstein made the remark, relativity is, if you are with your friend for 2 hours and you're ready to leave, it'll seem like 2 minutes. But if you put your finger on a hot stove for 2 seconds, it'll seem like 2 hours.
But not relative.
Correct. The reason being is that you need your 5 senses to observe nature. And your 5 senses are the result of an ovum gobbling up its work, putting you together. But you're no mechanism until you breathe. So even though the ovum gobbled up the sperm to form the human body and dilated itself for 9 months in mother's stomach, you still got to cut the cord to come out and breathe on your own. That's the biggest anguish. If you breathe to keep you, if you don't breathe, you'll throw you back in the soil. And the soil is going to be a pH factor all the time. So you are elements that don't like it. They're stuck with it to me. I'm stuck with it.
You're stuck with it, but you're stuck with it. But then you learn to work with it through understanding.
But you see, the question is, who is stuck with it? Not who we are.
Oh, it's who is stuck with it.
Yeah, you see, when you take a bath and look in the mirror, you see what you are. But you can't go on the road like that because it will be considered indecent. So you put on a legal food. By taking a bed sheet and wrap it around with a tie string in the middle and call it a moo-moo. And that's legal food. Now if you want to become egotistical, you take a lot of paint and put it in the face up and then put on all the accessories, and then they got the egotistical food. The legal food is to wrap a sheet around you and walk out on the road, and that's acceptable. You're not indecent. But what you are is minus the bed sheet and all the paint after you just got out of the bathtub. That's what you are. What are you doing?
is echo optics an aid to meditation afterwards?
Echo optic is an aid to help you to live with your schizophrenic experience after you go through it, when you learn to relive the ignition switch in your brain. Instead of panicking or feeling stressed out, that everything in this room is moving so fast, echo optics get you to become acquainted with what is called visual speed. Not chemical speed, but what would it take chemical speed to get a visual change? See, a lot of people take chemical speed to get a visual change. But what you want to do is take a visual substance with pictures that you're familiar with and then run fast to interact the brain. It's called rapid eye movements now. To force the brain to shift from too long an identification to a glance identification and a retention to find photographic memory. So you speed up your observation through the rapid eye movement of the brain. But this technique is not a new technique. The yogis have been doing it for centuries. They just didn't have mechanical ways to trigger it. We just developed mechanical ways to trigger it. But if you were to sit down and do a yoga test in a yoga class, they would want you to memorize a whole big page of words like that. And at the same time, do a mathematical formula on a blackboard, and then come and draw something that somebody's drawing, and then remember what somebody's talking about. They got about 9-10 people going on, all giving the same different information, and you got to sit down and recall everything that's the test. But, so if you really relax your brain to the level of potential, everything comes in exactly like photographs. So you can go and do the whole thing there, and then you pass the test. So that's how the yogis used to test themselves, if they really have developed the state of awareness. And the acupuncturist did another thing to see if they developed their memory, was to take a statue and have the 366 reference points drilled into like a hole, and they cover it with a rice paper and they give you a pin. And you have to go stick it to the paper. And if you find the right spot, you go into the hole because the paper will go in. See? If you don't go in and you push it in the wrong spot, then you know you're failed. Mm-hmm. So that was the way they used to test it in those days. You still got a type of the test going on now in China. So therefore, doctors got to pass that test. There's a big statue of the city hall.
In Liberty.
Liberty now, right? Yeah. You have to stick the paper in the right location.
I guess this is changing the subject. What you said, the Statue of Liberty was the I Am President. the essence of it anyway. All right, with the China's Statue of Liberty being copied all over the world, sort of, is this the I Am Presence?
Yeah.
As freedom moving in this.
You see, the geometrical structure is a means of inspiring the individual to be dedicated to his or her I Am-ness. And to trust in the I Am-ness of itself. But they have to have some kind of physical object to motivate them. And so therefore, artwork was the outcome. So when I say one picture is worth a thousand words, there was a kind of an inspiration to the mind frame. But one experience is worth a thousand pictures. So one protest is better than 100 statues.
We didn't end up there.
But that's the whole purpose of living in the now.
What's the common pattern that triggered that?
Liberty or freedom is the principle that no price is too high to pay. Liberty is a principle of freedom that no price is too high to pay. Because no greater love than he would lay down his life for his fellow man in liberty. And if you see the picture of squirrels moving to Rome in the Utility Canal, there are many squirrels battling to get you to be the winner, versus those who are battling against you so you don't become a winner. Now think of that one. Daddy throws out the sperms, and Mama got the ovum. And not only one sperm is thrown out, hundreds of them are thrown out. And some are working for the winner to win. And some are working to prevent the winner from winning. Now, the ovum is already set up. So if the person had 128 menstruations and they weren't conceived, that's gone. The next month is going to be 129, ovum, 129. So this is what happens in the person's stomach. This is ovum 129, cutting sperm 129, cutting sperm 129. This is ovum 129, cutting sperm 129, cutting sperm 129. Well, among dogs and cats and everything, they all gather around sperm 129. The problem is whether you're a husband and wife or your boyfriend and girlfriend.
Or you're heading for the fence.
But you still ovum 129, cottage sperm 129. All right, when the race begins, hundreds of sperm are thrown out. But the 129 sperm that's in the sequence of its formation is going to be drawn to the frequency of the ovum. All around it, there are approximately 50 that act as guardians to insulate 129 to get to the open.
It's already programmed.
It's already programmed.
So we get
one, 130 can't get it. But anything below 129 to 127 can get in, and they'll have twins. So this is ovum 129, and that's a sperm 129 is coming up. But then the ovum separates and it has two entrances. Then it has to slow down. Then the next one that I'm moving up, a 1-3-0 can't move in. The next one that you can move in is a 1-2-8. So when the 1-2-9 moves in, and the 1-2-8 lines up, and they move in together. If they don't move in together, you got a problem. Or you can always find out who's who. You call it Siamese twin. That's 1-2-8, jump the gun too fast, and muck it up. And nature would not permit such a thing to happen, so you lock it. Because you're given a chance to line up his frequency, he didn't line up efficiently, and he jumped the gun, and nature would lock it. So when the Siamese twin is taken out of the room, we can always have a full group. The one neck is longer than the other. So they all they have it like this. And that's the one that you, he's the 1-2-8, and that's the 1-2-9.
They were showing Siamese twins on television
last week. Regular twins, they one waited.
Right, and they come out even, one after the other. Well, the ovum separates, and each one bonds, and then it's formed at the end of the time. And then when the time is coming out now, ovum 1-2-9-A is coming out, ovum 1-2-9-B is coming out second.
What's the significance of
twins? The significance of twins is equal opportunity to equal momentum. Life is reciprocal. You have a right brain and a left brain. And the opportunity for both to act equally in a form. Because you're a composition of a both in a sperm. So the mother in you and the father in you is presented to act now as a twin formation. Now, funny thing is this, if you have triplets, you'll always find the oldest one and the youngest one are totally in opposition, and the middle one is the one who gets out of trouble.
Gets all the fun?
The middle twin gets all the fun. The older one is put into a situation to take care of other two.
Means it's babysitter.
Yeah. And the youngest one is always in opposition to anything that the old one has to project. And the middle one, the old one, the young one, always arguing, and the middle one is always there very good.
So if Helen and Charlton don't work at egg this time, they're going to be equal? That should be an interesting race next time.
Husband and wife will be twins.
Well, that's what the process is. They're put into a situation to experience equal distribution. But the point is this, when you don't know what you are, and you have to live the horoscope, that's the basis of what you're taking the chance of the food. When you know what you are, like you have the option now to play the horoscope or not to play it. But first establish what you are. And with that understanding, you can play any horoscope. You know what I mean? So this is why it is necessary to know what you are first, so that you're free to play any horoscope, than to just be a victim of the horoscope after a matter, without knowing what you are, and you're still searching for what you are. But first know what you are, so it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is the kingdom of righteousness, how it operates, how you got. And then free you, free men know all of yourself, then you can play any role you want. Because you know what you are. But when you don't know what you are, you're going to be constantly fulfilled by who you are instead of what you are. And then you're always going to blame somebody or some situation for a lousy deed. And that's the who will do that. But the what doesn't do that. The what knows what it is. And therefore, the what can accept any role because it's a master win already. It doesn't know what it is. So any role wouldn't make any difference. Now, if you want to free your mind from role symbols, then take acting course. and act the five important modes, and train yourself to be free and remain forever. First, the role you practice in the first hour is you're a victim. Then the second role in the second hour, you're the assailant. The third role you act is the victim parents who are sorry that the child got beat up to death. And the fourth role, you're the officer who is supposed to apprehend the assailant. And the fifth hour, the fifth role is the judge passing the penalty on the person who is wrong. Then you have a rounded out mode of how these functions work inside of you. Your immunity stays up and you never suffer from ATP. Now ATP is the worst disease, worst than AIDS.
What is it?
Attention-getting syndrome. And even God is suffering from that because he wants our attention by making us. See, that's the oldest and worst disease in the world, but the most important disease in the world.
And Christopher already knows how to do it.
Why is it the most important?
Well, you see, it's not a disease. It's an opportunity to find out how much attention you can handle. Some people can't handle attention.
Without your ego getting involved, that's what you're talking about.
See, it's necessary to be exposed to attention to develop immunity as well as to develop a sense of dignity and humility. So it's one of the greatest opportunities for developing immunity when you consider not a disease, but an opportunity for increasing your immunity. If it comes similar to the disease, then it's the greatest disease that could ever happen. Because none will supersede it. Every other disease will conquer it. So you don't but you don't like to classify attention getting syndrome as an actual disease because it's not an actual disease. It's a means to stimulate immunity if you know how to work with it. So, nothing wrong with having attention given to you, but to be carried away, to be craving to be important in the attention, then that could be a disease. You make yourself more vulnerable to that particular situation.
How do you tell when a child is getting to be, have a problem with it?
Well, it doesn't want to listen when we're told to do a certain thing.
Like clean up your room? I didn't.
Go ahead.
I didn't know it was attention getting. It was just.
You see, if a cat obeys the parent, when the parent gives the command after three or four repetitions, then it's getting to be a illness. You're entitled to refuse to do it for the first and the second time. For the third time, it's the time you start to cooperate because the parent is to the parent. And they wouldn't tell you to do something if it wasn't for your well-being.
Some would, some wouldn't.
Then that's how you have a problem. So when you took a person, when you have a son, to a karate teacher, and wanted your son to take karate, the teachers looked at the boy and said, you don't obey your parents. He said, how do you know that? He said, the way you walk. He said, if you can't obey your parents, don't come back. Now it really shook up the kid because he wanted to take the karate training because he saw karate kids and his dad looked at them when the teacher looked at him and said, you don't obey your parents. And he really put him in a bind. Well, he got back later on when the class was signed up. And you have to obey the teacher. Because when the teacher told him you have to do, you have to do it. But if you didn't do it, 7 minutes.
you look at some of these children that are abused now, if they obeyed some of the things their parents told them, in some cases, I think the parent wants attention. You know, the
I think so, yes. If you look up the horoscope and the biorhythm charts of the so-called abuse, you will find it. It's already set up in the
retribution. It's a comic whatever.
Nature doesn't have any something for nothing in this universe. You only get back what you give out. When we become more intellectual and less interactive with our environment, we become afraid of the individuals having to face their own particular confrontation. And we try to take away by insulating them from their confrontation, only to find out you're not helping the person, you're lowering their new level. In the jungle where I grew up, what I had to learn to survive in this environment will be called child abuse. But what you teach the child here to function in this society, he wouldn't last a second in the jungle. He'd get dead rot. Each location has its own discipline for survival. So we can't often say that a person imposing certain rules of abuse or no abuse or any type of limitation on a person is 100% valid, because each time frame or location is going to be totally different.
It's comic.
Now, if a man lives in the jungle and the parent, in order to validate, keep that child, this is what they're told. As soon as the child is born, throw it in the river. If it floats, keep it. If it don't float, forget it.
After 9 months, you
know that. That would be considered child abuse in this society. In that society,
mother abuse.
In that society, she's doing the most rational thing for what? No matter how she tries to protect that child by reaching down and pulling him out of the water, he's going to drown them. Because he will never survive that jungle. Even if you teach him how to swim, when time comes for him to face a dangerous condition,
a fighter. He's not a fighter. So he comes up to the United States.
Well, you see, they have another way. I didn't learn the martial arts like people learn it here in the competition. We only have two rules. The father tells you straight to your face. If somebody hits you, and you get up, make sure when you hit them, they don't get up. But if you want to be a nursemaid for them all their life, then you hit them this way, and make sure you have to hit the person, and then you'll be their nursemaid for all their life. That's to teach you compassion, at the same time teach you humility. At the same time teach that other person not to be vicious. But that's how you were told in the jungle. Now we were told competition. We were told survival. Now that type of survival technique isn't a practical thing in the competition world. In the competition is we train to accept the opponent to show that you can match the opponent than other women feel respected. That's different. You showed me the water as a kid. I came up, I floated.
I thought the master burnt the ice down, you didn't get thrown in.
So I floated.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, that was burned down too. What the heck?
Quickly,
yep, you must have tried. You really tried.
See, I born, the house is burning down. My mother had to give me up because the house is burning down. You got thrown in the water, you float. You can't nurse you because of you. Everything's gone here, why not body?
Congratulations, you're a winner.
Yeah, I'm worried. And then your brother teach you how to survive in the jungle. You gotta listen to the wind all the time and look out for the pirate snake. Now that's a snake that don't walk on the ground. All it does is coil itself up a mountain tree. And it only when the wind blows, it moves. So you can very well be prepared that you won't be in this way when it's moving. So, if the wind blows, the leaves make noise, and the fire snake is coiled up and it shoots out like straight like an arrow from one limb to the other. And then he wraps himself in and says, run away. Then he gets anything to eat. Nine times out of ten, anybody who you find get a bite right here in the neck, and the dead is the jungle, part snake bit.
Yeah, pit viper.
You have snakes that bite through your foot.
Yeah, this has two prongs.
This one bites in your neck.
Fine, I should tell.
And the color is red, green, like and yellow, like a parrot. That's what they call a parrot snake. Mm-hmm. And it's long, like an arrow. You're 2 feet long, and when he hits you, that's it. You ain't going to survive. There's no survival that hits you. Any other snake hit you, you can survive. You can get quick enough.
Yeah, the coral is fast. It works on the nerves.
But you can take care of that. If God is not going to bite you through.
That's true.
This one here, he hits you right in the jungle vein and you're over.
It's moving in the air.
So it hits you in the jungle of him and you have it. So you got to always listen to the wind. And so when your father and your mother talk to you, listen to your brother, your sister, you always listen to the wind. So pecking order is child abuse in the jungle. But in this society, we call it child abuse. In the jungle, is survival. So you listen to your brother, your sister, regardless, you don't, may not like it. They want to get you through the jungle. So that was the way we grew up. You have to listen to your one of all here. You don't go and ask your daddy questions or your mother questions. They'll send you back to the brother or sister older than you. Because they got the answer. They got it from the other brother and sister all the way up. So when you sit down in the family, you know, mom sits down, dad sits down, and the whole gang sits down. And then mom hands dad the fork and knife. And he cuts the piece of meat and he puts it in his picture. And he cuts another piece and puts it in mom's picture. Then the pecking order is done by you the last and get you the last.
So you've got good karma with your pecking order brother.
But it's all right.
There are kids because in the U.S. who killed their brother because the stereos do that. So what's keeping that brother to keep you alive if you're a pain in the butt? And he's not in a good humor that day.
He's keeping you alive for one reason. He's got to fight that at age 30, 40 and a half. Every brother or sister, the brother has to fight daddy at age 30 to 40 is a man. And the sister has to fight mother at the age 13 to 40 is a woman. It's martial arts. They're not hitting to kill you. You have to be able to pin the daddy down. Or you have to be able to pin mother down. So at age 13 is what they call the challenging way to become a woman or a man. and they set you up, if you win, then they set you up to get married. You're already selecting the future husband and the future wife after the competition is over.
I know why you headed to Canada.
So when I pinned my daddy down and I was, wait a mom, everybody shouting, B, you got it, here, daddy, good boy. And they said, now this is how you act as a man. Took out a cigar, I lit it, good. And I lit mine, boom. Then he has a jug of rum, big bottle of rum, two glasses.
That male ego was just at my head thinking.
Then pass the bottle around and say, cheers, you're a man today. Cheers. You drink it. You are the lady. What if it's fine, I swear to a man. But you didn't beat your daddy either. Daddy tricked you to make you believe you're killing them, because I was walking down Harlem one night, three guys rushed me up to fight and beat the heck out of me, and I kicked two of them, they went down, the third one I hit him, he went down and started getting up again, and I hit him a second time, and then I ran away. Then I figured, I can't be, I did that to my daddy, he went down. And then I said, oh, no, daddy came. I looked down the alleyway in Harlem and said, oh boy. I said, thank you, that girl, you are glad you took care of us. I had a favor. He did what he did. He wrestled with me and he faked the fall that I had kicked him down to make me feel I'm a man. That was the fake. But he didn't tell me that. I found out the hard way. Since then, I said, no more walking through the night and Harlem like that.
Well, would you have rather said you weren't a man? Since that seems to have been the important way to live.
When you're living in the jungle, you don't have too many choices.
I would think if you survived till 13 Tuesdays.
Choices are very specific. That's one thing about the jungle. You see, you have to go in the water every day to get the cattle for your daddy. You have the cattle playing his tricks with us. The cattle like to go in the water. You got to go haul them out. So they send it in. Now they train you to go in the water. You got a long piece of cord. Short bamboo, like that, sharpened both ends, tied in the cord, with a little tiny waist. That's in case if the alligator tries to bite you, take care of him. Then you carry a piece of meat in your hand, and you get to the river, and you see the cow over there. You take the meat and you throw it up the river. So the piranha fish went to the meat, and then you jump in the water, and you go for the with a lasso, go around your neck and pull him out. Then Mr. Alligator is going to move along in the water behind you. So when you're pulling the dog on the cow across, the last alligator is moving in. So you're trained.
Where's brother?
Brother?
That one is supposed to take care of you.
He done go on and do his thing.
He's swimming at the other end.
So, you gotta know how to take care of yourself then. So here comes the alligator, but alligators don't bite you underwater. And they don't bite this way. They bite that way. Side. So if he opens his mouth, all you do is take a little thing of the bamboo that his brother starts to have to work with. And as soon as he gets his mouth, inside them.
Well, there are two.
Very simple. You got a whole bunch of them in your country. So you know where you're going to come with them. That's where you go in the water with. You put it right there, see, his mouth comes down like that, his mouth goes, dig this thing. So you enough time to put in the insert. And it pops. And it comes down with knots. So the one end sticks up in the top end of the throat, the other end goes down the bottom. So the alligator comes up. Commit suicide. back at your house. And you got the card.
Provided, of course, you've got it in just right in your hand. Hey,
you got the card, and you're pulling onto the cold ears, pulling it by the water, going on the alligator pool. So you're sitting like crazy and getting onto the left. But you don't let go of the alligator. You get the car out of the water, and then you start pulling the alligator off. He's drowned by the water, the choke went on his own throat. But then you come home with meat for the family. Daddy, daddy, mommy, daddy, I got the alligator. Here's the steak tonight for everybody. That's right.
I can see it. Why don't they give you an Oscar in 13 instead of faking for a fascination? Getting you sick with booze and cigar.
It's really a generic respect for you. But in this society, we call it television. Now, if you go on a boys' camp, there you have to take a lot of different children to survive on a boys' camp.
I don't know any boys' camps got alligators. For honest. I wouldn't let my kid go. So it takes nerve to be born in the jungle.
Well, where was Adam and Eve born?
Sprung in yoga.
In the house or in the
jungle?
Garden. Garden of Eden is a jungle. What the heck do you think of that? What do you think of Garden of Eden was jungle? Not for the jungle. The jungle is only a word for what? A bunch of trees all around. What time of the year would God make the first year?
Spring.
Spring, good, see? And what do you make with belly button?
Yeah.
So what then, how old would they be?
How old?
What? Yeah, I'm not so high in the jungle without belly button. That's way too long.
13?
Oh,
how old were they, though, Jeff? How old were they? We're supposed to figure that out
because
they didn't have any belly buttons.
Mm-hmm. How old did you make up to survive in the jungle?
They were eternal.
Sweet
16? Good for you. I never heard of sweet 17 yet. Sweet 16. When the hormones are vibrating in you and you got to say, go forth and relax yourself, you know? Can't relax yourself without firing up your hormones. So then eat everything you see in the face of the earth. You see it for food and medicine.
What do you think there? So you had to become a vegetarian.
Then you still have dominion over the universe.
Don't eat the fruit. Don't eat the fruit of that one.
Yeah.
That belongs to the snake over there.
See?
That's my buddy. Don't bother him.
That's the whole psychology.
Eve should have thought it thing through before she did it. I mean, we could have been pushing computer buttons and getting babies, and then we're doing it the hard way and throwing them in rivers. You're born at the other end of the world. What about, say, Mars? How is birth handled over there? Of Venus? I know my fellow extraterrestrial whoever's.
Wait a minute. Mars is a planet to itself.
Okay.
The inhabitant of Mars is what we refer to as a rock.
Martian?
But then if Mars is divided into 800 countries, what would you call them now?
United Mars.
United Mars. We don't have a United Earth as yet. But they sure got a lot of people living on planet Earth, all scattered all over it. But we are carbon-based bodies. We are called Earth people, terrestrials. they are called marshals. They may be divided between 800 divisions of countries up there. We don't know.
But then we don't know the Martians really.
Well, we are busy saying we're going to go and land on their property and claim it for us.
I didn't say that. I just want to know they have babies to reproduce.
We're in for surprise. You see, when Columbus came to this country, he shook the musket and hit the gun because in the name of Isabella of Spain, I claim this land. The Indian man behind the rock was shooting bow and arrow, so he couldn't contest with those muskets. But what would be funny if Columbus was hitting the gun with a musket and that same Indian man came out with an M16 machine gun in 1492? Columbus would have fly back to Spain in his Santa Maria and said, Isabella, you can show it. And then it will go face us when we say we're going to land on these people's planet and call it ours for the whole planet Earth. They're going to zap us, we will have a place to go back here. So, with their finger.
Is that why Green had such a hard time?
So, it's a very preposterous idea that you can.
That's the some frequency of your lungs and it's healthy.
Is this the machine we're going to be getting?
No, the other machine is incorporates all of it. This is the vital thing.
Okay.
So. One of them.
Tell me how you're feeling. I'm not going to tell you something to do with that you.
I'm beginning to breathe deeper.
Jumping here when you hit the sore spot.
My lungs are busy. I have an opportunity.
Interesting, that's something that looks good.
So it's not, this is just a sound device.
That's all, right. It's a vacuum machine.
It's a vacuum machine.
You know, it's a building temple that I'm a dweller in this thereof. Vacuum the temple that I'm a breed thereof.
God's little vacuum cleaner.
Life is cleaning down.
Oh, you need cleaning. You said you were getting garbage for a long time. Then you found a new way to do it. Oh, it's not new, is it? Is that like crystals?
Let me explain something. Trauma causes magnetic changes in the crystals.
therefore causing it to be toxic or reactive. And the horoscope is the position of the planets through the same magnetic field in your body. So what this is doing is setting a frequency alignment to restore the magnetic balance. This is a magnet, it's sound going to it, coming up from the unit, to the frequency that the normal organ should operate at. So that's something to hear, the normal operation of your lung, heard at a subliminal level, now amplified to hear at the audible level.
So the sound you hear when you're holding that out is the sound you should hear when it's against her body, to know that it's cleaned up there?
Yeah.
It reminds me of some of the valve tones you hear when you're checking somebody's stethoscope. So the lungs, well, the valves are playing with the air too. Somebody's pushing air and pulling back.
That's what I said. It's a magnetic vacuuming, using magnetic field to change the toxic residue.
And now it's going down to the lowest
top. No, friend. You know, we breathe oxygen, and it's the gas that makes us what?
Yeah.
Conscious, we got that in class one. Consciousness is a phenomenon of the oxygen. Now you have three ways to get into the body. One, through the umbilical cord, the mother pumps it in, but you're not responsible for it. And as soon as the cord is cut, responsibility is placed upon you to take it through your nose. And you're allowed 30 years to mark up and 30 years to clean up. And if you stick it out, then you switch from your nose to your skin. It's called osmotic breathing, which the yogis call unified living. You don't breathe with your nose no more. You breathe through your skin. And that's sonic resonance. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word of the seed of the mouth. Resonance frequency is sustained by osmosity because the body is all skin. So you're doing what is called a unified breathing now. By vacuuming, the mechanism, the lungs now become sensitive to transfer this osmotic action to the entire body, so you can feel the whole body breathing through now for the first time. So it's not breath-free state. There's no breath free state, it's a breathless state you're arriving at. So when I say if the master got into samadhi, or mahasamadhi, he has taken the full control of the breathless state. Therefore the body doesn't decompose. That's evidence of the mastery of the breathless state.
How do they arrive at it?
By
through meditation?
No. At understanding the physics. They quit breathing with their nose and transfer to their what?
Skin.
Well, now try it. Feel your skin and listen to the sound. That's why I'm giving everyone you the experience. So the song you're hearing is to make you aware of the amplification of it going on inside of the skin, which you hear when you slow your brain down, and it's called meditation, to hear it at the audible live stream. That's not in there, that's what you're hearing, but you can feel it now. Traveling through the skin, osmosis.
Begin to push. Ha
ha ha.
That was so good.
That means you're detoxifying and you're thawing out. Oxygen is moving through your skin automatically now.
Right.
Let me clarify one thing. We've had our share of Christianity. We're moving into the actual science of Christianity, which is science of living. Man is God already crystallized. But man is not a God. It's God that crystallizes himself into manifestation. God is pure energy. Some. But in order for it to be observed and interact, it has to crystallize into manifestation. So come let us, meaning the elements with the sonic resonance together, put a manifestation into existence with a dualistic interplay, which is called a male-female or attraction-repulsion process based upon the magnetic field, as what we call love. This manifestation is here and now, and all the variations of it, which you call universe, interacting. But it's hoping that the individuality will learn how to recognize its totality within the individuality by the many mistakes it will make until it arrives at a correct opportunity for the individuality to lock in. And that is a carbon body, gone through all the processes, and then lock into the understanding of how the physics work. And that's what they call free man or free woman, lord of the self. You don't have a soul, you are soul or living soil. But living soil is already immortal. That means the atoms are here to stay, they're going nowhere. God is here, but he's playing the role of individuality. And individuality cannot be taken back, though it's imposed upon the elements without consent. The elements are allowed to rebel, and then they're allowed to volunteer, and that's the compensation. The compensation is when they volunteer, they have a carbon-based body, which is already set up to be immortal. So you don't own anything. You experience touch, which you crave as an element in the form of flesh. And then you recognize you're already immortal, but you can bring it about in flesh by understanding. And then you are free access to the universe as God in man, not man in God. God wants to be man, free within his own nature, moving about the universe as man, manifested form. But it has to work its process out all by itself in order to reap the reward. So brothers and sisters who come, they only offer us three ways: abuse, avoidance, or control. Now, abuse is first, avoidance is second, control is last. Within control comes understanding, and that's the grace. So we end up all recognizing our conscious immortality by understanding, and not by the abuse or by the avoidance. So we have to practice or go through all the other two. Whenever we acquire the understanding and the control of the understanding, then we are glory to the God. Because that's the highest form of God. It wants the understanding, not the miracle or the magic or the avoidance or the... It wants the understanding. That's what Paul was the first to break through with, saying, "I rebuke you and you rejoice, and for I live and I did in God. I don't want the miracles, I want the understanding." He was the first real breakthrough. So there we see it as the most valid of the three processes presented to the mechanism. How are you breathing good?
I seem to be sweating. I'm not aware of the numbs that much except for pain in my back. Perspiring. Now I know why I we didn't put in another set of clothes. I mean, I can think this is crazy.
How do you feel about?
Wet.
And she's wet, she's cleaning out her pores, is that what's happening?
Yeah, right.
Except for the sore spot.
Yeah, you've
right
got a
there.
Bunch of carrying your mommy a couple of traumas. Travel.
If you don't sweat, can you keep doing it?
Yeah.
See, that's been my problem. I wouldn't sweat. Even in a sauna, he would sit there and sweat, turn it up, and I wouldn't sweat until I came out and, you know, be cool. And then I would sweat.
Good. How are you feeling now?
Sweaty.
Not good enough.
Yeah, I've got sore spots. And I'm really sore down here.
Good. Try the carbon dioxide.
A lot of hot air.
You know, see, that's how you learn that your skin breathes, but then when you block it, it causes pain. Oh, it's frozen, there's no pain. These are only labels for lack of understanding. How are you feeling now?
Keep on the work.
It's great.
You're going to say that
I'm going to give him a good thing.
No, I think it feels so wonderful. But I think you just say that all day.
Yeah. Feeling good now?
I'm loosening up.
Yeah.
But
maybe you'll feel better.
Something to drink for? We have grape juice.
Mm-hmm.
Grape juice with water. You like some?
Yeah.
A body tie in it? Mm-hmm. What was some of those crates in there?
I got it. When people have pain, and they get medication, it's locked even more in the cell, but eventually, with tranquilizers and whatever people take, they do lose the pain. What happens? The cell is totally...
No, dead. That's not valid. Remember you say a tranquilizer, where are you going to get it? In the skin or in the mouth?
In the
mouth. You go in the mouth, what is tranquilized? The pain or the pressure from the colon to the area that reduces the pressure where the impact is occurring. So inside the colon, the tranquilizer goes and clamps down on the valve, and there the peristaltic valve is shut down temporarily to inhibit any pressure building up to the area of impact. So you get a sensation of pain being turned off, when in actuality it's a numbness induced by the constriction of the substance in the colon.
Okay. All right.
As soon as that period has passed, the pressure builds back again, simply because the endorphins are not triggered to take over. You have to trigger the endorphins to take over. If you trigger the endorphins to take over, you don't need the tranquilizer. But to trigger the endorphins to take over, you got to trick them. That's the funny part about it. They're knocked off of their particular behavior when you get the impact, and they're knocked down. and to trick them back, the three ways, a strong substance will force them to go in, mega doses will trick them, or one that acts like them. So if you got an itch, give you something that will itch itch. I'm sure we know it. It's like a CIA checking at the FBI, the FIB. So it's a kind of internal game they play, and then they switch on back. So what they do is now, we have found that we can bypass these things without going through the mouth, without going through the skin, by integrating it sonically. So to send the actual sound was there before it got thrown off, the sound now is non-invasive, but the sound is more geometrically attuned, forcing whatever causes to be distorted to get out of the way for the first time and go back to its normal operation. So the endorphins take over now by their own sonic potency.
I was thinking
No, but that's the way we're trained, so we can't blame them for that.
I know, but the body has no chance of hearing stuff that way.
I feel the breathing is easier.
Yes, that's what you've been observing, that the sound is actually opening up the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
The sound is actually opening up the breathing.
That's the heavy therapist.
Skin breathing? Yeah. And then you see the normal reaction is that it lost the perspire all over because oxygen is now getting into the body. Moving on time. All the time. So I repeat again. Life is elements of a certain weight and pH factor moving on time all the time. And you are a result of this particular phenomenon by the sound waves directing the timing to come into a geometry. So they say the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwelt with men. You are held together by the resonance of the harmonics. Take away the harmonics, you fall apart, and you become dust. Put back the harmonics, you come together, you look like skin. So if you're dust, before you came together as skin, and you can't get rid of dust, then you're already immortal. See, but we don't think of it that way. We think of dust as something dirty, disposable, no use. If you are dust, before you became a tissue as a geometry, you're already immortal if you went back to dust.
I don't know why it's triggering, but I remember Satsangi going to Zara, and she said, she's been dusting the same Maharaji's chair. And every time she dusted, she was dusting it again. And somehow or another, that triggers. I don't understand exactly why. That's the immortality. She thought she was going to dust that chair forever.
Elements are immortal. How can they go away? Okay. What is an element? Now think of the word element. What is it? It's a label for apple.
For apple.
And the geometry gives it a name. So a certain quantity come together to make a certain geometry is called iron. a certain quantity with a certain geometry come together, they call it calcium. To differentiate the two from the same, but they're made of the same 4 or 6 or 8. See what I mean? So that's what we're talking to ourselves.
This is the first time in my life I ever had a nail to grow in like this. Is that the lung that got stopped up? Because back in February I was in a room that had a lot of smoke and I think I coughed for a couple of days.
How are you feeling now? It's
been months. I feel fine. It feels
good. You feeling better?
I think so. Very good. That means then the nail is
going to
come out
yeah,
straight.
You're breathing, I'm fine, breathing better, you'll
be able to get it. How's that? Yeah, I feel great.
Feel.
Okay.
What's next?
I'm going to stay until 5 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. We will see in trace minerals, you will notice that there are some of them that repeat themselves. And the most important one in repetition is iodine. Iodine is a trace mineral that takes most importance because it's the only trace mineral that can feed lung strontium.
It's the only what?
Trace mineral that can feed lung strontium. If you get a radiation burn, it needs iodine to vivify. So the seaweed gives you your iodine, the miso is absorbed. When they made miso for the radiation burn people in Nagasaki, Hiroshima, they put the iodine at the face down the strontium nitrate for the radiation. And so strontium is there in the trace mineral. It's present in the nuclear explosion, but it takes iodine to phase it down. So when Chernobyl had a problem, everybody was busy buying up iodine, liquid iodine for the truth, to insulate them against the inflammation of any kind of effect in the air, any overexposure, to the strontium nitrate. So it immunizes the body. So you have your trace mineral iodine, and it falls in the yellow and the green color spectrum. But you'll notice that the bulk of all these trace minerals are located in that area of the body, in the yellow and the green. That's to ensure you that you get the proper digestion in your small intestine, the blood in the kidney, and the heart. And you'll see that the heart has two colors, orange and yellow. And the kidney has two colors, green and blue. But those are shunt organs, drawing from both light processes. So the heart draws from the orange, and it draws from the yellow. The kidney draws from the green, and it draws from the blue. So the trace minerals that are operating in the two colors affect the shunt organs the most. So we need to keep the shunt organs always reinforced. That's why when they have a heart transplant, the kidney gives out. In the future, they're not going to do heart transplant. They're going to cut their heart open, put in a valve, and sew back the heart up, and keep the original heart. So that's what they're doing now. They're going to shunt the set up a kind of a pump where they cut into the heart and shunt the fluid out of the heart into that pump.